Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really digging into a career that's way more layered than you might think at first glance. We're talking about the journey of Michael Elliott Epps.
Yeah, Mike Epps.
Yeah.
Comedian, actor. But when you look at the sources we've gathered, it's clear there's a lot more going on.
Exactly. It's not just punchlines and, you know, those high-energy sidekick roles he's famous for. Looking at his whole filmography, his stand-up, even his business stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a masterclass in adapting.
That really jumps out from the sources, doesn't it? We're looking at, what, almost three decades of work? Since the mid-90s?
Right.
And it's defined by this interesting duality. You've got the iconic comedy characters, the ones everyone knows. Day-Day Jones, obviously.
Can't forget Day-Day.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
But then there's this other side. Him constantly pushing into different areas, unexpected dramatic roles, which we should definitely talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Plus hosting gigs, getting deep into the music scene. It shows a real drive beyond just being funny on screen.
So our mission here for you listening is to kind of peel back those layers. We're using the sources to map out the big moments, the roles that really defined him, and figure out how he stayed relevant for so long. You know, going from Indianapolis to Hollywood and now being a big name in streaming, too.
It's a story about versatility, really.
Yeah.
How you navigate a long career in entertainment.
Okay, before we dive into the timeline, let's just lock down the basics, the core facts.
Good idea. So, full name, Michael Elliott Epps, born November 18, 1970. That makes him, based on our source context date, 54.
Okay.
Born in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yeah.
His parents were Mary Reed and Tommy Epps, and his main fields are stand-up, film, and TV. Been active professionally since about 1994.
So yeah, that's nearly 30 years right there. Consistent output.
Very consistent. Rarely seems to have slowed down.
All right. Section one. Let's talk about where it all began. That foundation. You can't really understand his later moves without looking at how he launched, right?
Absolutely. And for comedians of that era, especially black comedians, there was one place that was absolutely crucial.
Gotta be Def Comedy Jam.
Def Comedy Jam. Exactly. It wasn't just a show. It was like a cultural phenomenon. Raw, unfiltered comedy that you just didn't see anywhere else on TV then.
And Epps was right in the thick of it. Did he move just for that?
The sources say yes. He moved from Indianapolis to Brooklyn as an adult, specifically aiming to get on that show. And he did in 1994.
Wow. That's a big bet to make, moving across the country like that.
Shows incredible self-belief, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it paid off quickly. Getting on the show led almost straight away to joining the Def Comedy Jam Tour in 1995.
Which is massive.
Huge. And then he followed that up with appearances on two of the HBO specials. For a young comic back then, that was like hitting the jackpot in terms of visibility.
Okay, so Def Jam puts him on the map. How does that translate into movies? Because that next step, landing Day-Day Jones, that was just monumental for his career.
It really was. And the connection, interestingly, comes directly from that stand-up success. It involves Ice Cube.
Makes sense, given the Friday connection.
Right. So Ice Cube was developing Next Friday, the sequel, around 1999. Chris Tucker wasn't coming back, so they needed a new character, a new dynamic.
And Epps was on the radar.
He was, but it wasn't handed to him. The sources mention he went through weeks of auditions. It sounds like it was pretty competitive.
So what sealed the deal?
According to the material, Ice Cube actually went to see one of Epps' live stand-up sets. And apparently that's what convinced him. Seeing that raw energy on stage.
So the stand-up, his core craft, directly opened that movie door.
Yeah.
What was it about Day-Day that just clicked so well with audiences?
Well, Day-Day really became Epps' signature comedic persona, didn't he? He's that kind of chaotic, frenetic, always hustling, but somehow still likable cousin.
Yeah. Well, Ice Cube's character, Craig, is more the straight man reacting to everything.
Exactly. Day-Day brings all the high-energy physical comedy and the slightly unpredictable element. He became this recognizable type, and it worked so well, obviously, that Epps came back for the next sequel, Friday After Next, in 2002.
That role basically guaranteed him work for years, you figure. People knew who he was instantly.
It was his calling card, no doubt about it.
And you mentioned something interesting about Friday After Next. He didn't just play Day-Day.
Yeah, it's a fun little detail in the sources. He also played a very minor character, the old man with shotgun.
Oh, right. I remember that.
It's just a small thing, but it kind of shows that even once he was the co-lead, he was still up for doing goofy character bits, not taking himself too seriously.
So Friday is the breakout, definitely. But let's rewind just a tiny bit. His very first movie appearance wasn't Next Friday, was it?
No, good point. The sources actually pinpoint his first on-screen film role as being in 1997. It was Vin Diesel's second movie as a director, a film called Strays.
Strays, okay. Didn't know Vin Diesel directed back then.
Yeah, it was early in Diesel's career, too.
Yeah.
So Epp's appearance there, even if small, shows he was already hustling, getting his foot in the door before the big Day-Day break came along.
And then the role started coming faster around the turn of the millennium.
Yeah, the period around 2000, 2001 was busy for him. There's a cameo in Three Strikes in 2000. He supported Jamie Foxx in Bait the same year.
Bait? Okay.
And then another really memorable comedic role, Baby Powder in How High, with Method Man and Red Man in 2001.
Baby Powder, another classic Epps character, the flashy, kind of over-the-top pimp.
Right. So if you look at Day-Day-Day, Baby Powder, those early roles, they really cemented that specific persona for him early on. The charismatic, maybe slightly shady, high-energy guy.
A very bankable persona at the time.
Incredibly marketable. It gave him a strong identity. But, you know, the real test for any actor is longevity. Can you move beyond that initial typecasting? And that's where things get really interesting with Epps.
Which takes us perfectly into the next section, his adaptability. Because sticking to one thing, even if it's successful, often doesn't cut it long-term in Hollywood. You gotta pivot.
Exactly. And analyzing how he pivoted is key to understanding his career.
Yeah.
He nailed the stoner comedy, the sidekick role, but he clearly realized, okay, I need to show more. And he did, moving into action, horror, and eventually some really surprising dramatic stuff.
Let's talk about that action horror move first, because going from Friday and How High to fighting zombies, that feels like a sharp turn.
It was. He took on the role of L.G. Lloyd Jefferson Wade in the Resident Evil movies.
Right, Resident Evil, yeah. Apocalypse in 2004, and then he came back for Extinction in 2007.
And L.J. wasn't a comedic character. This was a conscious choice, you have to assume. Mm-hmm. A strategic move to say, hey, I can do more than just make you laugh.
How was he than those? It's a different skill set, playing survival horror versus slapstick.
Well, the role required him to play off tension, danger. It's about reacting to the situation, not setting up jokes. And the fact that he got cast in a huge established franchise like Resident Evil showed the casting directors were willing to see him differently. It was a risk stepping outside his comfort zone like that, but it broadened his range significantly.
But what's interesting is, even while he's fighting zombies, he didn't ditch comedy entirely, did he? He kept those connections going.
Oh, absolutely not. He was smart about it. He reunited with Ice Cube again in 2002 in All About the Benjamins.
Right, where Epps is the kind of bumbling thief and Cube's the bounty hunter.
Yeah, so he's still doing comedy, still working with Cube, maintaining that base, diversifying but not abandoning what got him there.
And then came another massive comedy role, one that probably introduced him to a whole different audience.
You mean Black Doug?
Black Doug from The Hangover.
It's such a great example of making a huge impact with limited screen time. He's not in the movie a ton, but he's absolutely crucial and memorable.
The guy who kind of holds the key to the whole mess.
Exactly. And being in a monster hit like The Hangover, that just boosted his profile even more, especially with mainstream comedy audiences who maybe didn't know the Friday films as well.
He was also doing voice work around this time, too, stepping in for someone pretty major.
Yeah, he took over the voice of Boog the Bear in Open Season 2 in 2008. Martin Lawrence voiced Boog in the first one.
Oh, interesting. He replaced Martin Lawrence.
And funnily enough, Epps actually starred with Martin Lawrence in a movie that same year, Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins. Epps played Reggie, Roscoe's cousin.
Ah, okay. So there was already a connection there.
Seems like it. It just shows his willingness to jump into different kinds of projects, whether it's voice acting or taking over a role. And speaking of reprising roles, he even brought back Baby Powder years later.
He did. For what?
For the TV movie sequel, How High 2, which came out in 2019.
Wow, okay. So he's keeping all these different threads going simultaneously. Comedy, action, voice work, reprising old characters.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Building a really diverse portfolio. But then comes the role that I think really made people sit up and take notice of his acting chops in a totally new way.
Gotta be Sparkle, the 2012 remake.
Yes. sparkle. This wasn't just another role. This felt like a statement.
Especially considering the context, Whitney Houston's final film starring alongside Jordan Sparks, and Epps wasn't the comic relief.
Not at all. He played Satin Struthers. And Satin was, well, he was the bad guy, the main antagonist.
Describe Satin a bit based on the sources. What kind of character was this?
The descriptions paint him as this really evil and abusive drug kingpin. But here's the twist: by day, he was also a stand-up comic.
Whoa, that's a chilling combination. A comedian who's secretly a monster.
Right. And for Epps, who built his career on being the funny guy, to step into a role that dark, it was his first major non-comedic role. And it was incredibly challenging.
How do people react? Critics? Audiences?
The sources say the performance was actually really well received critically. People were surprised, maybe even shocked, to see the guy they knew as Day-Day embody that level of menace. He had to ditch the usual Epps energy and find something much colder, much more calculated.
So Sparkle was the proof that he had serious dramatic depth.
I think so. It definitely changed the perception of him in the industry. It showed he wasn't just a comedian who could act a little. He was an actor who could handle complex, dark material. It basically opened up a whole new range of possibilities for him.
And that leads directly to the conversation around him playing one of the most iconic and complex figures in entertainment history.
Richard Pryor.
Getting linked to that role is huge for any actor, but especially for a comedian known for broad comedy who'd just proven his dramatic skills.
Absolutely. The fact that he was seriously considered and actually cast for the lead role in a planned Richard Pryor biopic around 2014, that's enormous validation. Lee Daniels was attached to direct.
Lee Daniels, wow. That would have been a major project.
Huge. Being chosen to play Pryor, someone who navigated comedy and intense personal drama like almost no one else. It felt like the ultimate culmination of Epps' own journey towards dramatic work.
But the sources say that specific biopic project kind of stalled out. It's in development hell.
Yeah, that's the term for when a movie gets stuck in limbo. Maybe funding falls through, script issues, rights problems, whatever the reason, that big Lee Daniels biopic hasn't happened yet. It's still listed as stalled.
That must be frustrating. To get the role and then nothing.
You'd imagine so. But here's the thing. Even though the main biopic stalled, Epps did end up playing Richard Pryor, just in different projects.
Oh, really? What?
He portrayed Pryor in the Nina Simone biopic, Nina, which came out in 2016. And then he played him again more recently in the HBO series Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. That was in 2022.
Huh. So he got to embody the character, just not in the standalone film he was originally cast in.
Exactly. He had to capture Pryor's essence in these, like, supporting appearances, which is maybe even harder in some ways. You don't have 2 hours to build the character arc. You have to nail it quickly.
It still shows the industry trusts him with that kind of weighty material, though.
Definitely. Even without the main biopic, playing Pryor multiple times keeps that dramatic credibility firmly established.
Okay, so he's proven his range across genres. Let's talk about where he is now, especially in television, because he's found a really solid footing in sitcom world, particularly with streaming.
Yes, this feels like the current stability phase of his career. First, there was the sitcom Uncle Buck in 2016. It only lasted one season, but it was lead role.
Right, based on the old John Candy movie.
Yeah, but the much bigger deal is his current show. Since 2021, he's been starring as Benny Upshaw in the Netflix sitcom The Upshaws.
And that show's been quite successful, hasn't it? Multiple seasons.
It has. Co-starring with Wanda Sykes and Kim Fields. Landing a lead role on a popular multi-season Netflix show. I mean, in today's world, that's a major achievement. It signifies real staying power and bankability in the streaming era.
It really brings things full circle in a way. From breaking out on TV with Def Comedy Jam to now anchoring his own hit sitcom on a global streaming platform.
A great point. It shows continuous adaptation to the changing media landscape.
But throughout all these movie roles, dramatic turns, sitcom leads, we can't forget the thing that started it all, his stand-up. Did he keep that going consistently?
Oh, yeah. The sources make it clear that stand-up has remained a constant for him. It's the bedrock. He's consistently put out stand-up specials over the years.
Can you give us a sense of that timeline?
Sure. His first recorded special mentioned is Mike Epps. Inappropriate Behavior from 2006, and then there's a steady stream after that, right up to the most recent one listed, ready to sell out in 2024.
So almost 20 years of recorded specials alongside everything else.
Exactly. It shows a real commitment to the craft, you know. Returning to the stage, honing his material, connecting directly with that live audience, it feels like that's where he recharges.
That dedication really sets the stage for our next section, because his influence extends beyond just acting and stand-up. He became this figure involved in hosting, music, almost like an entrepreneur.
Yeah, section 3 looks at that broader footprint. He really leveraged his fame and personality, didn't he? Especially within the hip-hop community.
Let's start with the hosting gigs. Those were pretty high profile.
Definitely.
Yeah.
He hosted the BT Hip Hop Awards for 4 years straight, from 2009 to 2012.
That's a big gig. Hosting an award show like that requires a certain kind of energy, right? You got to know the culture.
Absolutely. You need to be funny, sharp, but also respectful of the artists and the music. His style seemed to fit well, high energy, quick on his feet, seemed to have a genuine connection with the people in the room.
And he was doing his own specials around the same time, too.
Yeah, he had a special, Underrated and Never Faded Out, in 2010, the same year he was hosting the BET Awards. So really maximizing his visibility across platforms.
He also had that interesting role back in his hometown for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's a nice detail. In 2012, the Super Bowl, remember XLVI, was held in Indianapolis. And Epps served as the official Super Bowl ambassador for the city.
What did that involve, just showing up?
It seemed like more than that. The sources say he appeared in commercials promoting Indy, made special appearances down in the Super Bowl Village. It was a way for him to connect back to his roots and be the face of his city during this huge national event. Kind of cool.
Definitely. Okay, now let's really get into the music industry stuff.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like he was more than just a fan. He was actively involved.
Deeply involved. Not just making cameos in videos, although he did plenty of those, which we'll get to. But he was hosting projects, putting out his own music.
Hosting projects like mixtapes.
Yeah, exactly. The sources mention he hosted an album for Jim Jones and Skull Gang in 2008 called A Tribute to Bad Santa, starring Mike Epps.
Okay, interesting title.
Right. And he also hosted G-Unit's mixtape Elephant in the Sand that same year.
G-Unit, 50 Cent's crew.
Yep. And hosting these projects often meant doing skits, intros, outros, basically weaving his comedy persona throughout the whole musical project. Like, he was the comedic guide for the listener. He even appeared on one of the G-Unit tracks, Hollow Through Him.
So he wasn't just lending his name, he was contributing content.
Seems that way. And then he decided to release his own music project.
Right, you mentioned that funny business. Dat album, when was that?
That came out in 2009. The sources suggest it was mostly comedy-focused tracks, but it did have actual singles. Big Girls came out in 2008.
Were there others?
Yeah. Singles called Trying to Be a Gangsta and Ain't You You also came out around 2009. It shows him really trying to bridge his comedy world directly with the music format.
It's a common move for big comedians, isn't it? Turning their stage persona into recorded bits or songs.
Definitely. It's part of building that multi-platform brand.
And his connections clearly ran deep, based on who he collaborated with or whose tracks sampled him.
For sure. He had guest spots on tracks with guys like French Montana and Dom Kennedy.
Yeah.
But maybe even more telling is how his actual stand-up comedy got sampled by major artists.
Like who?
Material from his Underrated and Never Faded special was used on a Bad Meets Evil track that's Eminem and Royce Day 5'9", called I'm On Everything.
Wow. Okay.
And maybe most famously, J. Cole sampled him on the track Runaway from his Born Sinner album.
That's significant when your stand-up bits become part of the fabric of hip-hop tracks by major artists.
It means you've really permeated the culture, right?
Yeah.
Your voice itself becomes shorthand for a certain vibe or attitude.
But his involvement in the music business side wasn't all smooth sailing, was it? There was that Naptown Records situation.
Yeah. The Naptown Records story is kind of a cautionary tale about the risks involved, even for celebrities trying to run a label.
What was his role exactly?
The sources identify him as the CEO of Naptown Records, based in Indianapolis. And in 2006, he signed a local indie artist named Philip White, who went by Filthy Phil. Apparently, White had just been released from prison on a drug charge.
And Epps gave him a deal.
A pretty significant one, according to reports, around $175,000, which shows Epps was putting serious money behind trying to boost local talent from his city.
So what went wrong?
Well, the deal was reportedly terminated just a year later, in 2007. And the reason was pretty stark. White was charged with first-degree murder out in Oakland, California.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that venture ended in a really difficult and tragic circumstances. A tough lesson in the volatility of the music business, I imagine.
Despite that setback, though, his presence in the hip-hop world seemed undiminished. Just look at all the music video cameos.
The list is long. It really shows how connected and respected he remained within that scene. We're talking videos like West Side Connection's Gangsta Nation back in 2003, Ice Cube's Why We Thugs in 2006.
So staying close to his early collaborators.
Yep. Then Hurricane Chris's A Baby in 2007. Fast forward a decade, and he's in T-Grizzly's No Effort in 2017, and 21 Savage's huge hit Bank Account that same year.
That's incredible range, from West Coast OGs to the new generation of trap stars.
It really underscores his cultural relevance across different eras of hip-hop. His appearance signifies something, maybe authenticity, maybe just being a recognizable, cool figure within that world.
All this visibility, though, the movies, the music, the stand-up, it inevitably brings scrutiny. Mm. Which leads us into section 4, his personal life, the awards, but also the controversies.
Right. When you have a career that long and that public, you're bound to hit some turbulence. And Epps has certainly had his share of public relations challenges alongside the successes.
Let's start with the personal milestones mentioned in the sources, his family life.
Okay. The sources note 2 marriages. His first was to Michelle McCain. They got married in July 2006 and apparently lived in Beverly Hills. They divorced in September 2017.
And his second marriage?
He married Kyra Robinson in June 2019. The wedding was in Newport Beach, California. The sources mention she's an executive at the OWN network and a producer on Ayanla. Fix My Life.
Interesting. And kids.
The sources state he has 7 children. So clearly a full family life happening alongside this very busy, very public career.
Now, on the professional recognition side, the NAACP Image Awards seem particularly significant for him.
They really do tell a story of his evolution. He's received nominations and wins across different categories over the years.
What specifically?
Well, back in 2011, he got a nomination for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Motion Picture. Then in 2015, recognition for TV, a nomination for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Comedy Series.
Okay, film and traditional TV covered.
And then most recently, in 2023, he actually won Outstanding Actor in a Comedy Series for The Upshaws.
Ah, for the Netflix show.
Exactly. So that trajectory, film nomination, TV nomination, streaming TV win it, perfectly mirrors his career path and his ability to stay relevant and critically acknowledged across all those platforms for over a decade.
That's impressive consistency. But now we have to address the more difficult parts of his public record, the controversies. And it's important, as you said, to just lay out what the sources report neutrally.
Agreed. We need to be clear, we're reporting on the incidents as documented. The first area mentioned is backlash regarding some of his stand-up material.
What was the issue there?
Sources report that Epps faced significant criticism from disability advocates. They objected to parts of his act where he allegedly mocked children with physical and mental disabilities.
Oof. Yeah, that's always a sensitive line in comedy.
Extremely sensitive. And this generated considerable public outcry at the time, sparking debates about comedic boundaries and targeting vulnerable groups. It definitely impacted his public image for a while.
Then there was a specific incident involving alleged violence in Atlanta.
Yes, in 2014. This involved another comedian named LeVar Walker. An arrest warrant was actually issued for Epps on June 3rd, 2014.
An arrest warrant? What allegedly happened?
The incident reportedly took place on June 1st outside the Uptown Comedy Club in Atlanta. Walker claimed that Epps, along with some other men described as bodyguards, assaulted him.
Why? What was the supposed motive?
The reported reason was that Walker had made some kind of parody video mocking Epps and Kevin Hart. Walker alleged that Epps and the others struck him, kicked him, and damaged his glasses and phone.
Wow, that's a serious accusation between fellow comedians.
Very serious. And it created this stark contrast, didn't it, between the funny guy persona on screen and these allegations of real-world aggression. It put a spotlight on rivalries within the comedy scene, too.
And the third major controversy mentioned is the kangaroo.
Yes, the kangaroo incident. This was in 2017 during a show in Detroit.
What exactly happened? He just brought a kangaroo on stage.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
And it did not go over well.
Yeah.
Video started circulating online, and many people, including animal rights groups, were really upset. They pointed out that the kangaroo looked distressed.
Yeah, I vaguely remember seeing clips. It looked like he was kind of holding it, maybe against its will.
That was the criticism, that he was holding it, pulling on its harness, and the animal clearly wasn't comfortable being on a stage with bright lights and loud noise.
How did Epps respond to that backlash? Because it got pretty intense online.
He ended up issuing a public apology. He said the whole thing was unscripted, acknowledged it was a mistake, and specifically said he regretted potentially harming the animal. It became this viral moment, a real example of how quickly things can blow up online, especially when animal welfare is involved.
So putting it all together, the huge successes, the dramatic turns, the music ventures, these controversies. It's a really complex picture.
It absolutely is. You see this incredibly savvy career unfold. He takes that one breakout character, Day-Day Jones, which could have typecast him forever.
Right.
And uses it as a launch pad. He builds this multi-platform career, moving into drama with Sparkle,
right,
anchoring a hit streaming show like The Upshaws, even trying his hand at being a record executive.
And tackling iconic roles like Richard Pryor along the way.
Exactly. His journey really highlights the power of locking down that initial memorable brand, Day-Day, and then having the guts and the skill to pivot and take risks.
Yeah.
He wasn't afraid to step into action movies or serious drama or the tricky world of hip-hop business.
His influence really does cut across different parts of culture. Comedy stages, movie screens, hip-hop tracks.
Simultaneously. Which is pretty rare.
And that dramatic work, especially Sparkle, it really makes you think, doesn't it, about how we perceive comedians.
It really does. His success there and his constant pursuit of playing Richard Pryor, what does that tell you, the listener, about the dramatic potential that often gets overlooked in people known primarily for comedy? Hollywood loves putting actors in boxes.
Yeah.
But Epps consistently fought against that. It raises the question, how much talent are we missing because we typecast performers based on their early success?
So looking ahead, what's next for him? The sources mention upcoming projects like Madam Web, The Underdogs.
Right. New movies aimed at today's audience. So the question for you to consider is, how will these next projects continue to shape his legacy? Will he lean more into the reliable comedy of something like The Upshaws? Or will he keep pushing for those challenging dramatic roles?
That tension between the Mike Epps everyone knows from comedy and the serious actor he's proven himself to be, that's the fascinating thread to keep watching. His deep dive is definitely still ongoing.